If your WordPress site matters, your host matters. You can have rock-solid, fast, and secure WordPress hosting for a fraction of what you pay for your cable bill. WP Engine can increase your conversions and protect your WordPress site from hackers. Learn more at wpengine.com/lyw. This is Love Your Work. This show will help you find the clues that will lead you to your calling. I'm David Cadvey, and on Love Your Work, you know I bring in entrepreneurs and creators that have broken away from the pack, but today I'm bringing you an expert to lead a clinic on something that's very important to us all, email. You use it, you love it, and you probably hate it as well. In fact, the average person checks their email 11 times an hour, which is definitely not good if you're trying to do any sort of deep creative or original work. Jocelyn K. Gly is author of a new book. It's Unsubscribe, How to Kill Email Anxiety, Avoid Distractions, and Get Real Work Done. You can buy the book at cadvey.net/email. It's an awesome book, and I really wish I would have had it when I was first trying to get things done with email in the working world. Now, since then, I've gotten my email decently organized just through learning the hard way. But still, Unsubscribe had some very useful ideas and tools for me, and I'll be exploring it all in my conversation with Jocelyn today. Listen to this episode to learn how you can keep email from distracting you from your important work, how you can use it to move projects forward, to build relationships with influential people, and how you can use it in a way that will nurture the relationships that you do have. So stick around to the end for a summary of the actionable learnings from this conversation and find out what I personally found the most helpful. I'll also have those in a nice, neat, digestible bullet point format over in the show notes at cadvey.net. And if you've been sampling Love Your Work and haven't subscribed, now would be a really good time to do that. Dan Ariely's show goes live November 10th. He's a world-renowned behavioral scientist and a former colleague of mine. He wrote a book called Predictably Irrational and many other fascinating books. And he has really fascinating insights on how our brain's little shortcomings can interfere with doing our best work.
As a social scientist, you know, I think that there's lots of mysteries in the universe. There's out of space, there's molecular biology. But, you know, the mystery of our own lives is really quite amazing.
Here's Jocelyn K. Gly. This episode is brought to you by Treehouse. Take your career to the next level and learn from over 1,000 videos created by expert teachers on web design, coding, business, and much more. Claim your 14-day free trial at cadvey.net/treehouse. I am here with Jocelyn K. Gly, and she's author of Unsubscribe. And so, Jocelyn, what is it about email, you think, that causes so much anxiety for so much people?
Well, I mean, I think that a lot of us really have gotten to this point where we, you know, kind of allow email to sort of dictate our mood, our focus, and our to-do list even throughout the day. And I think part of that is, it's funny, I was thinking about this. I was actually just thinking about this the other day, is that, you know, kind of the way that most people start their work day, right, is you sort of sit down and, you know, you write out a to-do list, or maybe you have it on your phone or something like that. Or, you know, if you're really organized, maybe you do it the night before. I think part of the problem that we all struggle with is we kind of think we have this like one to-do list, and then, but we actually really have three to-do lists, and the three to-do lists are really like, there's the one that you write down, then there's your calendar, and then there's email. And those things are kind of all actually like separate to-do lists. And they're sort of frequently out of alignment. You know, and so the book specifically really goes deep on, you know, kind of email and how to get that under control. But I think it's kind of part of the larger, you know, sort of productivity picture that everyone's kind of trying to figure out.
Yeah, I think the problem seems to be that email is just, you're sort of in reactive mode with email. Things come in and then all of a sudden that ends up taking priority over what's on your calendar, or what's on your to-do list, or what's in the back of your mind. Is that accurate?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that, I mean, you know, the some of the stats on like how much time people are spending on email, how much they're sort of self-interrupting themselves to check their email are, you know, pretty frightening. It's sort of like people are spending like about 28% of their work week reading, responding to email. The average person processes 122 messages a day. the average person is checking their email 11 times an hour. You know, in this type of, you know, obviously like constant checking and interruption of your workflow while you're trying to do other tasks is, you know, extremely detrimental. And that's why I wanted to write a book about email, because I think in a certain sense, it, in a way you hear about it and you're like, oh, it seems like kind of a passé topic, but it's actually, you know, the actual amount of time that people are spending on email in their workday and how distracting they find it is a huge problem, and one that's actually just getting worse. Like even millennials check their email more than anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's taking up a tremendous amount of mental energy, I think, and it's really detracting from people doing their best work.
100%.
And it's almost like a game for some people, or it is like a game in some way. You're just constantly getting some kind of dopamine hit that makes you think that you're making progress when in fact you're not. Is that accurate to you?
Well, right, precisely. You know, you and I were just talking about you know, the behavioral economist Dan Ariely, who was one of the people kind of got me interested in one of these kind of underpinnings of why we're so addicted to email, which is this concept of random rewards, right? Which is basically the idea that it goes back basically to the psychologist B.F. Skinner, who did these experiments with behavioral experiments with rats back in the 1930s. And he wanted to see how rats would respond, how they would behave in response to different rewards. And so he kind of first tested them on sort of this fixed rewards schedule. So, you know, he had them in this box and basically they had to press a lever and they would get a pellet. And it was on sort of like a fixed schedule, right? So maybe they press the lever 100 times and they get the pellet, they get the reward. And so it's a fixed schedule, right? Press the lever 100 times, you get the reward. And then he tested the rat out on a variable reward schedule. And so in that scenario, the rats never had any concept of when the reward was coming, right? Maybe they had to press the lever 2 times and they would get a reward, maybe 20 times, maybe 200 times. But the point was they never knew when it was coming. And what he found was that the rats who were on that variable schedule, when they would get these kind of random rewards, they were significantly more motivated than the rats on the fixed schedule. And they would almost kind of keep pressing that lever almost until they would die. Like they were so obsessed with those random rewards. And it turns out that we're actually very similar to rats in those terms. Humans love random rewards as well. And email is kind of like this, you know, almost perfect random rewards system, right? Like most of the time, you know, you kind of press the lever, right, to check your mail and, you know, you get something kind of boring or annoying, or maybe someone's asking you to do something you don't particularly want to do, you know, but every once in a while you get something great. You know, it's maybe someone who wants to invest in your company or someone who wants to give you a talk at a really amazing conference. And, you know, those are the kind of random rewards that keep us really engaged. And because we never know when they're coming, we kind of just want to keep checking again and again and again. And, you know, so email is like a perfect system for that. But also, you know, and there's only sort of even more of a proliferation of other types of media that are doing the same thing, right? Like, of course, like social media and Slack and, you know, all of those different things are kind of random rewards engines as well. So it's, I think it's a very difficult thing for us to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to what you're talking about. You know, I've gotten, you know, most of my email is pretty not important and pretty mundane, but I've gotten book deal offers in my email before, right? Like a life-changing email, or something serendipitous can happen while you're checking social media where suddenly you see a post of a friend who's in town tonight who's looking for who's available to have dinner or something, some sort of random reward like that. And it's like those little random rewards cause us to make a cognitive error, which is to believe to ascribe some sort of reliable value to engaging in that action, that somehow that means that we should put aside our important work to be checking email all the time and, you know, just to extend it to social media as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we're just in this moment where the amount of incoming information, right, all these digital tools that people can communicate with us have proliferated so much that, you know, you could now literally spend like your entire day just, you know, responding to email or dealing with your Facebook messages or dealing with your, you know, what people are saying to you in Slack or, you know, on Twitter. And you could just eat up your whole day doing that. And we kind of have to, you know, just really shift the way that we think about productivity and the way that we specifically think about email to, I think, a completely different understanding, because I think we're still sort of dealing with these things the way that we would in like the physical world. You know what I mean? Like when you used to, this, we have this concept that like somehow we should be able to manage everything that is incoming, when in fact, when you have a sort of digital self and when you have a digital inbox and when you have multiple digital inboxes across multiple different types of apps, you know, the amount of communication that you can get is literally infinite, but you're just still one person. You can only deal with so much, you know? And so I think this kind of concept of inbox zero that we're all so addicted to is just completely unrealistic at this point. But, you know, as we're just talking about, there's sort of this brain chemistry that kind of underpins email and these other apps that makes you still kind of strive for that goal. But we have to kind of course correct.
Yeah, the inbox zero thing makes us feel like it's this to-do list item that's not done, and when maybe it might not be the most realistic goal to always have zero items in your inbox.
No, not anymore. And I think that you know, it's interesting. There was you know, some recent research that, you know, kind of uncovered, you know, sort of another level of kind of brain chemistry that kind of underpins that inbox zero idea, which is this notion of what scientists call completion bias, right? This idea that our brains really crave completion, that we love, you know, these sort of quick, easy to finish tasks. And we get like, you know, every time we complete a task, we get that kind of hit of dopamine that you were talking about. And that kind of makes us want to repeat that behavior again and again and again. And email is sort of a perfect example of that. You know, it kind of has this like very clear, you know, or seemingly clear, we'll say, you know, sort of progress bar in terms of your unread message count, you know, and as you kind of whittle it down, you know, you get these kind of like little mini hits of completion, right? With, of course, like inbox zero being sort of the pinnacle of that completion. And there's, you know, kind of literally something about our brain chemistry that really likes that type of completion feedback loop. And so it really actually makes us predisposed to do these kind of quick, easy to finish tasks. But, right, the problem is that, of course, like, you know, the sort of really meaningful work that we do, you know, whether you're sort of building a, you know, small business or trying to, you know, figure out, you know, how you're going to fund your new startup, or even if you're just trying to write a novel, those are really long tasks, you know, that take weeks, months, or even years. And there's sort of no, you know, built-in kind of milestones or little hits of completion that you get for those things. And so I think it's very easy for us to fall into that trap of email and kind of give into that kind of sense of completion bias, you know, and get really absorbed in busy work. And then you kind of forget to focus on our best work, you know, on the stuff that really is going to bring our lives meaning.
So there's this way that, that email kind of hacks our completion bias and our, it's almost like a gamified thing that, that hacks our brain and distracts us. There's also a strong social component to email. I mean, obviously that's like the lifeblood of email is relationships. And I'm sure that as your book comes out, you'll probably get an email from somebody who's like, oh, hey, Jocelyn, remember we went to junior high together. I saw you wrote a book. Could you drop one in the mail for me? And could you sign one and send it to me? And, you know, you're going to get like some email requests that are requesting your time and resources. And what about the way that those things affect our relationship with email?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I talk about in the book that I think is really important, you know, when we're kind of living this world where, you know, everyone is just getting more email than they could possibly be expected to deal with, it means that we have to get sort of super clear on our priorities, you know, on what we're really trying to achieve in a career or business sense, and also who are the people who are kind of aligning with those goals, those business goals that you have, or those careers, the goals that you have. And I think it's actually really constructive to kind of make a, you know, almost a sort of mental hierarchy of who the people are that really matter to you. Because right, when email comes into your inbox, it's just sort of like this level playing field, you know, and I mean, literally visually from a design perspective, it seems as if everything is equal, right? But all messages, mm-hmm. of course, are not created equal, right? Like some are extremely tied to, you know, goals that you want to forward, and some are just sort of random people who may be really nice people, or maybe, you know, people are just sending you a templated email, but, you know, who are sort of people you could choose or choose not to give your time to. So one of the things that I think is really important is kind of creating sort of that mental hierarchy of like, okay, who are my VIPs? Like, who are the 3 to 5 people, you know, who are really going to help, you know, for my career goals, or just, you know, really important in your life? You know, it could be your boss and your significant other and, you know, a very big deal client, for instance. Think about the VIPs, then think about the key collaborators, you know, those people who are helping you kind of move essential projects forward. And then kind of the third level is, you know, just sort of, you know, kind of interesting, fun people, the people who are, you know, kind of show up in your inbox, you kind of, you know, they're sharing insight, they're sharing laughter with you, but they're not like, it's not urgent, you know, it's not crucial that you communicate with those people. And then kind of the fourth rung is just randoms, right? Like all those people who just sort of, you don't even know, but they just sort of show up in your inbox uninvited. And I think that you kind of have to, like, I think it's actually constructive, literally, like, write down, kind of use that hierarchy, VIPs, key collaborators, fun people, randoms, you know, and think about who kind of falls in where, and kind of think about, like, what level, you know, of time you want to spend on each group, and literally, you know, how quickly you want to be responding to those people, you know? And I think it's just because you could spend, you know, 80% of your time in email responding to, you know, these sort of random people, right? And if you don't have any type of hierarchy, it's like you're just responding to them like as if they were as important as one of your VIPs.
Right. If you aren't mindful about it, it's as if, you know, if I were to tell our listeners not to picture a pink elephant riding a bicycle right now, they're going to be picturing a pink elephant riding a bicycle, whether they wanted to or not, just because I just invaded their consciousness. Their consciousness in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when an email comes in. But if you have some sort of a structure, a way to mentally frame that incoming email, then you can reduce the amount that it takes over your consciousness.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and I think part of that is, you know, a lot like a certain portion of the book, you know, I really spend not talking about email because I think that, you know, one of the problems is we're spending so much time doing, but we're spending very little time deciding, you know, deciding what we should be doing because we have all of this sort of busy work to keep us occupied. But I think it's incredibly important to just literally be like very clear on your goals. I have like next to my desk, I'm in my office right now. I have this list of kind of my 4 most important projects for the next, you know, 4 to 6 months. I have kind of the key things that I want to achieve. I have the key things that I need to do to get to those goals. And, you know, to kind of have that or something like that clear in your mind, or literally like clear on your wall next to your desk of your priorities. So as you're kind of doing those things, you're going through your inbox, you're going through your social media feeds, you can kind of be like, okay, like very clear on your priorities. You know?
I see. So you're really delineating what is important but not urgent, so that the things that are unimportant but urgent don't derail you from those goals.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's just so easy now to be busy, but it's incredibly difficult to be deliberate and to be focused, you know? Mm-hmm. But which also means that if you make the effort to be very deliberate and to be focused, it's not really that hard to kind of come out on top. You know, because everyone else is sort of distracted and kind of mired in this like undertow of communications that everyone's dealing with.
Yeah, this is the way, a good way that a knowledge worker can compete is that if everybody else is being reactive and getting sucked into social media and getting sucked in their email, and you have maybe set aside some time to think very deeply about your goals and setting up systems so that you aren't drowning in those things, then you can get a totally deeper and better quality of work out of that precious time than your peers do.
Yeah, well, then you can link it up to, you know, sort of real tactical things that you can do once you're very kind of clear on your priorities and you're clear on, you know, the people that are really important to forwarding those priorities. So, I mean, one example would be, well, so first, just to talk like a little bit more about, you know, kind of some research behind email and how we process it. You know, basically that, you know, there's kind of two ways, right, that most people deal with email. Either, you know, they're kind of what you were describing as sort of a reactor, right? They're kind of like constantly nibbling through their, you know, on their email throughout the day, kind of driven by notifications and kind of just constantly interrupting, you know, themselves to check their email like multiple times an hour. Mm-hmm. And then there's another group of people, right, who are more disciplined, who are sort of, who are batchers, right? And they're kind of, you know, maybe checking their email in designated times, two or, you know, say three times a day, and just, you know, saying, I'm going to take half an hour, 45 minutes, power through my email, and then I'm going to focus on other stuff. And not surprisingly, research has shown that the people who are checking their email in batchers are significantly more productive, they're happier, and they're less stressed. Right. So that's like a pretty good taste. That's a pretty good case for checking your email in batches. Right. Yeah. But it's hard, right? Because it requires some discipline, right? And one of the things, I think one of the biggest barriers to doing that, right, is people are worried like, oh, well, you know, what if this super important investor emails me while I'm like offline for 3 hours, you know, and I don't want to miss that. And so you fall into this pattern of constantly checking your email because maybe that one important email is going to come through. But if you're really clear about who your VIPs are, you know, then you can do tactical things like, say you use an iPhone, you can literally make that person the VIP on your iPhone, tie it to VIP notifications so you get a special push notification when they email you. So you can feel comfortable saying, you know what, I'm not going to look at my email for 2 hours, for 3 hours. And, you know, if that investor emails me, then I'll get the notification and then I can respond to it quickly, but it's going to allow me to ignore all the other bullshit that's invading my inbox, you know, during that time period.
Yeah. And another thing that can prevent people from feeling free to batch their email is just that there might be these floating uncommunicated expectations where they might think that, oh, their boss is going to be upset if they don't respond to emails right away. And what are some ways that they can get themselves out of that, whether it is a figment of their imagination or not?
Precisely. No, I mean, so that's exactly it, right? Like, again, you could, you know, make your boss a VIP or make your, you know, and I actually for myself change my notifications constantly based on, or my VIP notifications based on what's happening, you know, so say like when I was trying to get a book deal for this book that's coming out, like I was, you know, it was very urgent and I was dealing a lot with my agent. And so I made my agent a VIP, you know, so I would get everything on push notification for her. But then when that, you know, when that project passed, then I was like, okay, well, I took her off the VIP list because her messages were no longer urgent at that particular time, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think kind of constantly changing that and updating it to which projects are relevant to you and what's really urgent and should be salient for your work is really important. You know, and I also think, so, you know, in terms of the boss thing, like, I think it's just like, make that person, you know, make that person a VIP notification and just don't, you know, and then you don't even have to have the conversation about ignoring their emails. But I also think that, you know, when you're talking to your boss, if you were say trying to make other changes in your schedule so that, you know, you can be more productive, I think that most employers are open to it if you frame it in the right way. You know, if you say like, you know what, I want to do kind of a radical experiment to really try to improve, you know, increase my productivity. You know, here's what I want to do. When you kind of frame it in terms of like wanting to increase your productivity, I think it's fairly rare that an employer is kind of going to be like, well, I'm not interested in that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think you can always kind of come to them from, you know, that direction.
If you sort of set the expectation that, look, I'm working on this big project, I need to think deeply for long periods of time. Is it okay if we have a, you know, 6-hour window for me to respond to emails in some manner, something like that, a conversation like that?
Yeah. And I mean, I think like do that if they're open to it. And then if they're, you know, if they're not, if you're like, oh, you know, he or she is never going to go for that, then, you know, you just put them on VIP notifications and, you know, you just say, well, that allows me to ignore 95% of the email I get. And, you know, if he or she emails me, then I'll deal with it immediately. And that's fine, you know, because I think it's good to be realistic, right? Like, it's all well and good to be like, check your email 3 times a day. But sometimes there just are things that are really important, or people who just feel that their emails need to be responded to immediately. And, you know, so you have to have tactics to do that. But if you're really clear on who those people are, then it's pretty easy to do that, but still continue to, you know, to filter out most of the noise, right?
Yeah, and I think it's funny, and I don't really know the solution to this, which maybe you have some ideas for it, is that some people have different expectations about what email is for. Now, I believe that if I'm running late for a lunch or dinner meeting, that I should text that person. Mm-hmm. And I know other people who will send an email and say, oh, yeah, I'm running 5 minutes late. And like, I'm not going to see that email because I don't have notifications on my phone for things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's a particular situation. I'm in your camp, of course, like text generally speaking before those things. But, you know, I think those things usually kind of come out in the wash, right? When you show up and it's been 5 minutes and then you're like, well, maybe I'll check my email and see.
Yeah.
But I think that there are a lot more sort of, I mean, that's sort of like a very irksome problem, but I think there are actually a lot more problems that are extremely time consuming that are happening on email, you know, where people are, you know, trying to kind of brainstorm on email, or they're trying to do, you know, kind of solve complex problems, you know, or things of that nature. And then you kind of have to find, you know, I think elegant ways to let them know that this would be, you know, a conversation better had in a meeting, or just, you know, pick up the phone and decide to kind of expedite things that way. I think so many of us have just gotten really lazy with regard to email, you know, and we have this kind of like pass the buck attitude towards it sometimes, where you're just kind of like, oh, you just want that like unread message count to go down a little bit. So you sort of respond to someone, but maybe you don't respond to them, you know, in full or as thoroughly as you might, because you're just kind of like, oh, I just want to like get it out of my inbox. But it's just sort of like, that's not going to be productive. You know, I think one of my kind of, I don't know, sort of mantras for email is to always try to close the conversation. So to like always offer up as much information as you possibly can, not in an overwhelming way, but in a literally like, let's just, is there anything I can provide with them so they can just say yes or no when they get this email and move on? Because that's going to be more efficient for both of us than to have this huge, long back and forth thread, mm-hmm. right? And so thinking specifically, we were talking about bosses before. I think one of the things that like, you know, best practice for email, when you're emailing your boss, if you're consulting them about something, is to, you know, never just ask a question, but always ask a question and propose a solution, right? Because I think when you're thinking about busy people, you're thinking about, you know, bosses, CEOs, investors, you know, these are people who just want to like look at an email, they want to say yes or no, and then they want to like move on. You know, they don't want to like write you a book about why you should do a certain thing. So I think
they're executives. You know, the word execute means that basically you're going to execute the action. They just want to say yes.
Precisely.
Or no,
right? So you never want to email one of those people, you know, which is sort of a like, hey, what do you think? You know, it should be like, what do you think? Like, I'm thinking like A or B or C, like, what's your take, you know, and like always just really always offer something up. So you have that opportunity for that person to really close the conversation at the next step, you know, and even same goes if you're scheduling, you know, things as simple as trying to schedule a meeting. You know, if I was like, hey, David, like, do you want to have lunch next week? You know, you could just write me back and be like, sure, you know, or you could write me back and be like, okay, like I'm free next Thursday or Friday. Like, you know, what about 12 or 1 p.m. on like one of those days, you know? So hopefully maybe I can go, okay, great. Like 12 on Thursday works. We're done, you know? Or even using apps. Like there's one that a lot of people have been using lately called Calendly, you know, which you can kind of basically use to email people, you know, what are your available shared times, and to have them, you know, just select a time and never have to email you back, you know, and then it gets pushed to both of your calendars and you're done, you know, and you can ignore that whole just obnoxious, you know, email thread that is constantly happening about kind of planning meetings and.
Right. Yeah. There's also schedule once is one of them as well.
Is that a good one?
I mean, they're pretty good. I know that myself as like a podcaster, a lot of podcasters use those. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten around to using them yet. Part of it probably just because I'm not a podcast machine. I put out an episode every 2 weeks with interviews. So I definitely keep them. It hasn't been that difficult, surprisingly. But there have been people who maybe they have open hours where you can call them and mm-hmm. they have 15-minute blocks that you can sign up for. And in those sort of cases, I've found it really useful. You don't have to worry about inconveniencing them at all. You just go in and click and it's all good. But I want to go back to this idea of unproductive brainstorming happening on emails. I'm sure that a lot of our listeners who do think about whether something is email appropriate or not have coworkers or clients who will often start brainstorming ideas on an email thread. And then they're just thinking, oh gosh, how do I get out of this? What are some ways to handle a situation like that?
Yeah, I mean, that one's a tough one. I wish I could just be like, do this one thing. I mean, I think my general strategy for that one in particular, I've definitely worked at companies, particularly I feel like people in large companies sometimes seem to have a predilection to brainstorm on email for some reason, is to kind of say, you know, hey, like this is a bunch of great ideas. I think it would be much more productive to, you know, take it offline and discuss in a meeting, propose some meeting times, and then take everything off that thread and just like pop it into a Google Doc or some other sort of shared doc and say, you know what, like I put everyone's notes in here. If you want to have your future ideas, pop them in this Google Doc. We'll discuss them at the meeting. You know, I'm going to kind of take control of the agenda for this meeting. I think you have to be super proactive with email about constantly pushing people to other mediums where the conversation is going to be more productive, you know, depending on what that task is.
Here's one little tiny pet peeve that I run into sometimes. I don't think it was mentioned in the book, but I thought it'd be fun to mention is when you have somebody that you work with a lot and then they respond to an email of yours and it has a subject line for a certain thing and then they respond and then they start talking about a different issue. Mm-hmm. And then later when you try to find that email, you can't find it because it's in a subject line that doesn't make any sense to you.
No, that's super annoying. And I think that I think one of the challenges of email is if we like want to make it better for ourselves, we ourselves have to sort of take the initiative and be proactive. I experience that same thing that you're describing, you know, and in those contexts, I try to be very conscious about saying, okay, well, when I respond to this thing that they just brought up that has nothing to do with the other thing, then, you know, actually change the subject line so that, you know that when you are looking for it later, you will actually be able to find it because it'll be based on something that feels relevant to you, right? But it's sort of annoying because you're like, well, you don't always want to be like the one who has to be super proactive about everything. But I think the thing with email is like, even when it feels a little irksome or annoying to be proactive, it's sort of like, well, it's going to save you time in the end too. if you can just kind of take it offline or cut the conversation short or wrap it all up in a phone call, you know, so it kind of behooves you to go that extra mile to do whatever is going to help you kind of be more efficient in the long run.
Yeah, you can change the subject line. If you are sending an email to somebody on two different, if you are sending emails at the same time to somebody on two different subjects, please, for the sake of humanity, send two different emails with two different subject lines. That's my camp. That's what I believe.
Yeah. There's actually a cool trick. I don't know if you know about that. I just learned about recently for people who use Gmail, which is you can take your address and you can do a plus sign and then you can like add anything to it and it will mm-hmm. still go to your email address. But then you can use those different addresses to filter for certain things. So like, let's say you like to subscribe to newsletters, but it gets really annoying to you when they kind of clutter up your inbox, you know? So you could go like, okay, like David+newsletter@gmail.com. And then you could set up a rule to filter everything that comes into David plus newsletter into like a separate folder. Mm-hmm. So you can just kind of go into it, you know, when you need to. I think there's all these little like email hacks like that.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that a lot of people on my newsletter do. They'll put like a caveat at the end or something when they put the plus sign there. And I always see that. I'm like, oh, they think I'm going to sell their email address to somebody? Because that's another thing that you could do is that if you do keep track of emails that way, you can get a sense for when you do get those unsolicited emails sometimes. You're like, where the hell did they get my email address? Sometimes it'll be right there.
Well, there's a great one that I've been using lately, a free email app that's called Easily Do Email, which is free. And one of the things that's so awesome about it is it just has this like one-touch unsubscribe feature. So basically, like anytime you get a promotional email, right at the top, it'll have an unsubscribe button that you can hit. And you don't have to leave your inbox. You don't have to go to a separate website to unsubscribe. It just unsubscribes you right there, which I don't know, for me personally, it's been like a dream, you know, because sometimes you get those emails and you kind of put off on subscribing because you're like, that's kind of a pain in the ass. But this sort of like one touch feature is pretty magical. It also has some other pretty good features.
We're going to take a quick break. Remember when you used to enlist your friends to help you move? You'd round up a bunch of them and waste an entire Saturday giving them hernias and all for a couple slices of pizza. I remember the first time that I hired movers. I wondered to myself, why had it taken me so long to realize what a good deal this was? A few hundred dollars to save my friendships and not lose my deposit by driving the corner of my couch through the drywall? Yeah, that was worth it. Sometimes you just grow out of the scarcity mindset. Like the time that I grew out of my $5 a month hosting plan. I think it happened at 3 a.m. on a Saturday night while I was busy picking malware links out of my templates. I moved to WP Engine and I never looked back. WP Engine is not your $5 a month hosting plan where your site is left vulnerable to hackers and you have to worry about keeping it up to date yourself. Mindset shift. WP Engine costs a fraction of what your cable bill costs. If you want your site to succeed, you've got to invest in a good host. WP Engine can increase your conversions and protect your WordPress site from hackers. Learn more at wpengine.com/LYW. So aside from cutting through the cloud of noise that email presents, email can actually be a really powerful tool. Like with email, you can connect with influential people, just as one example. Are there any tips for getting more out of email?
Tips for getting more out of email. I mean, I think a lot of the book focuses specifically on, you know, kind of, I think, streamlining, right? So minimizing how much time we're spending on email. But one thing that I do have in the back of the book is kind of this whole, what I call like a cheat sheet section that kind of responds to a lot of specific problems that people have or just like specific goals that they might want to achieve. And there's sort of like more almost scripts in the book. So, you know, how to reach out to someone that you admire or how to set up a coffee meeting or how to negotiate a fee for yourself or, you know, how to pitch someone that you've never met. And those are kind of the positive ones. And then there's, you know, sort of more negative ones like how to deliver criticism or how to respond to angry customers or one of my favorite ones, how to decline an introduction or contact request when it's uncomfortable. But those are kind of, I don't know if I want to kind of go through them on the podcast. They're sort of like, you know, scripts, literally like types of emails that you could write. But there is a lot of sort of tactical stuff like that in kind of the back of the book. That's very just like, how do I do this like very specific, type of task in terms of reaching out to someone.
Yeah, I have to thank you on behalf of humanity for including in their guidelines for doing introductions well, because there's an annoying trend of people just sort of dumping email introductions onto somebody without first checking to see if they're interested, and it can get pretty awkward.
Yeah. Super awkward. Yeah. I mean, one of the kind of classic email tips in there is, you know, just only doing opt-in introductions, right? So, you know, if I want you to introduce me to a third party, you know, you kind of reach out to that third party in advance of the introduction and make sure that they're okay with it before you connect us. And I think that's something that, you know, maybe wasn't sort of standard email etiquette in the past, but I think in this moment where everyone is super overloaded, you know, doing only opt-in introductions is super crucial. And, you know, you were talking earlier, right, about how, you know, our relationships are our most valuable asset, of course. And email is, you know, email is a part of that, right? It's part of building relationships. And so I think that making sure that you're always being mindful of other people's time and energy and kind of helping them protect it, you know, by asking them if they want an introduction is incredibly important, because otherwise you can kind of, I mean, honestly, you can end up alienating people, you know?
Yeah, this is really critical for maintaining friendships or contacts that you might have, especially if you know someone who has a lot of random people asking for their time on a regular basis. Just because they're your friend doesn't mean that you should introduce just anybody to them. And in fact, because they're your friend, you should be extra considerate of their bandwidth so you can keep that friendship.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really erodes your credibility, right, at a certain point. And it also just, you know, for me, like I used to curate, you know, this huge creative conference, the 99U conference. And I would encounter this in really awkward ways sometimes where someone would not ask me about an introduction. And then they would introduce me to someone and be like, hey, I think they'd be like a great person to speak at your conference. And then it would put me in an incredibly awkward position, you know, where I would then have to maybe like tell them that I didn't want them to speak, but, you know, had never had the opportunity to kind of, you know, make a real decision about it in advance of being put in that position. So I think you have to be quite careful about that.
Oh, yeah. And obviously everybody listening to this already knows this, but don't just dump intros onto people. At least get their permission. You don't know what they're working on. It might not be a good time now, and it might be a better time later. But what about when you're cold emailing a busy person to ask something of them? I know you have some great templates in the back of the book, but could you give us a quick example of for someone who is, say, emailing someone to be a guest on their podcast, if you're willing to share?
Yeah, 100%. I will give you, there's kind of a whole section in the book that's kind of a sort of a tip sheet for kind of, you know, reaching out to busy people. But I'll give you kind of maybe a couple of quick tips from that section. I think one of the most important things in, you know, this kind of always on super mobile era, when you're reaching out to someone who's busy, is to always, always lead with the ask. You know, to think about literally like, you know, most people are checking their phone for the first time on a mobile phone. You want to kind of think about what that two-line message preview that they're going to see as they're scrolling through their inbox is going to look like. And just, you know, honestly, in a short attention span world, get to the point right away. You know, so if you're going to ask me to speak on your podcast, put that right up top. You might need to give me a lot more information about it, but put it underneath. So it's kind of like, okay, lead with the ask. So immediately, like, that person can understand, you know, literally what's being asked of them. I think the second point is to establish your credibility. If you're reaching out to someone you don't know, you know, I think whenever anyone opens an email, kind of one of those tacit questions kind of hovering in their head is like, why should I care? You know? And so you want to kind of also like very quickly establish, you know, so from a podcast perspective, you know, you could say I have, you know, X amount of listeners, you know, I've had X, you know, very respectable and impressive guests on the podcast, you know, so do something to kind of get them to pay attention, understand why you're a person, you know, kind of worth noticing. And then I think one of the other really important things to do that people really overlook a lot is to just kind of acknowledge that you're taking up their time and sort of be respectful of it, you know? So to, you know, whatever it is in the way that you sign off, you know, say like, okay, I know you're an extremely busy person, but you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to consider this opportunity, or whatever it is, kind of baking a little bit of, you know, kind of empathy and understanding into your ask. So when that person sees the email, it's sort of like they understand that you know that they're super busy and they have a lot of other really important things to deal with, and you're kind of situating your ask within that context. Because I think, you know, when you kind of come off as like, oh, I'm equally as important as like everything else in your life, it's sort of like sometimes people kind of write you off because you seem very annoying.
Yeah, definitely. And you have to look at it from the perspective of the person that you're asking as well. So, for example, you and I have never met. So when I reached out to you, I was sure to lead with the idea that I wanted to help promote your book. And even I do this with people that I already know who are busy. This is helpful in that context. We were just talking about Dan Ariely. I've worked with Dan before. But I know that he's incredibly busy, so instead of just asking him to be on my show, I saw when he had his book coming out, and then I set a reminder email for myself in Boomerang just like months in advance, so that way I could ask him at a time that would benefit him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great approach. You constantly want to be, making the argument from the standpoint of the value that you're providing to them, rather than the value that that they are providing to you, right? So you're kind of bringing something to the table. I think it's essential.
And what about if you're nervously contemplating whether or not you should reach out to an influential person? How do you know that whether you should even bother?
About whether or not how to decide whether you should even try. I mean, I think if it's someone that you've never emailed before, it's sort of impossible to know. I mean, I'm of the mindset that you should always give it a shot, but then, you obviously want to be, sensitive to being annoying. There's kind of a section in the book that's specifically about following up. And I think when you're reaching out to someone, you're cold calling someone, that's great. And maybe, you can do like one follow-up, but at a certain point you got to like dial it down. I'm sure you've experienced where, someone you don't even know, or like they may be marketing something, like follows up with you 2, 3, 4 times when you haven't responded to them. And you're like, okay, like this person is not like picking up the signals, So I think if you frame it in the right way, it's always worth giving a shot, but you never want to come off from the standpoint of being entitled. And I think, as you were saying, even in little ways, like I was thinking about, I was reading an article by Jason Fried, the founder of Basecamp, the other day, and he was talking about all the emails that he gets from people who are like, hey, like I want to pick your brain, they're like, it's kind of like they're nice people, but like he gets so many of those emails that he's sort of like, what he was kind of asking for people to do is to offer something up. He's like, hey, just like offer me, like give me some value, And it could just be that like you're a regular user of Basecamp and there's this certain feature that you think that could be improved, and kind of offering some type of feedback in terms of that. So I think sometimes like people think that they, especially if they're maybe junior to the person that they are emailing, that they don't necessarily have some type of value to add. But I think it's kind of worth exploring how you can kind of always try to do that to get them to kind of notice you.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned Jason Fried, because he was actually the very first guest on this show. Like one of my life's great accomplishments is convincing Jason Fried to come on my podcast. And that was years of just quietly kind of letting him know I exist. Like I come to see him speak and I ask questions then and maybe come up and quickly introduce myself. And so if I like saw him on Twitter looking for a recommendation for a product or something, I'd chime in. There's a lot of different ways that you can get on someone's radar in a way that not only isn't going to be annoying to them, but will actually help them, so that when you finally do make the ask, they'll be receptive to it. And by the way, I don't mean like send them articles, because then you're really just giving them homework.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the interesting things that happens a lot in email, and I love your example of kind of this like amazing, like kind of slow burn strategy just to kind of build goodwill and awareness, And right. And that's how you build any good relationship, right? Like you're not like, hi, give me something, you can like get to know them and, chat a little bit. But I think one circumstance I would say in which I would not ask someone for something is if the reason that you kind of know that person in the first place is that they did you a favor, like that doesn't kind of put you on their on their list to kind of owe you something else when you ask again, because I think sometimes you might meet people because they kind of came on your podcast or they spoke at your conference or something like that. And circumstances come up where it would be great to like know that person in a different capacity, but you kind of have to always sort of remember like, kind of which way the scales are weighing in that relationship, if it's kind of like, oh, wait, well, the reason that I know them in the first place is that they were kind enough to sort of do me this favor, that's not kind of a reason to like go back to the well immediately, and kind of ask them for something else. I think you kind of constantly want to be trying to kind of balance out those scales, right? Like as much as you can.
I think we have a lot of really useful stuff here on cutting out the noise in email and getting the most out of email. And we're almost out of time, but there's one question that I try to ask all my guests that I'm especially curious about, because you seem like someone who's very organized. Do you make your bed?
I do make my bed.
And has that always been a habit of yours?
I think it's always been a habit of mine. I don't know. It's one of those things that doesn't actually seem very hard to me. So maybe I probably just naturally... Yeah, I'm just naturally like very tidy.
Do you have a final message for our listeners to kind of summarize what we've talked about today?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately, you know, with regard to email, but sort of just any type of getting any type of work done in general, is that I think in this world that we live in, with so many incoming messages, so many possible distractions, so many opportunities for busy work, that in many ways, productivity is really becoming about what you don't do as much as what you do do. So I think it's really worth thinking about, you know, what you kind of need to peel away and what you need to sort of, you know, stop doing. There's the great business author, Jim Collins, who wrote From Good to Great and a number of other books, had this practice of making at the beginning of every year a stop doing list. And I think that's a great practice for people to engage in, to kind of take a moment to think about, you know, the things that are really, really being kind of a huge drag on their productivity, you know, and the things that you don't want to be doing. And then, you know, write those things down and maybe, you know, post them up on a wall next to your desk and think about how you can kind of cut away all that noise to really hone in on the stuff that's really important.
And where can our listeners get more of you?
My website is at jkglei.com. And yeah, they go there. I write regularly about productivity and careers and, you know, just kind of trying to find a little bit more meaning in our daily work. And they can find the book there as well.
Jocelyn K. Glei, everyone. Her new book is Unsubscribe, How to Kill Email Anxiety, Avoid Distractions, and Get Real Work Done. You can buy it at Academy.net/email. Thanks so much for taking the time today, Jocelyn.
That was my pleasure. Thanks, David.
Love Your Work is brought to you in part by Audible, and they'd like to give you a free audiobook. Choose from over 180,000 audiobooks on any subject you can imagine. Just go to Academy.net/audible to claim your free audiobook. Okay, I think that was a very useful and actionable conversation. So I figured this time around, I'd try summarizing what I learned about being effective with email. So first of all, it's helpful to think about, why is email distracting? It gives us a variable reward. And as seen in the rat studies of B.F. Skinner, that it gets us hooked on checking our email even when it's not to our benefit, just because every once in a while we get a reward and every once in a while we don't so much, and there's no way to really predict it. Also, it ends up intruding on our to-do list. It intrudes on our other priorities. Email has a sense that maybe it's urgent when in fact it actually isn't. It also has like a gamified feel to it because of the concept of inbox zero, which is perhaps unrealistic today. And it gives us a goal to strive toward that doesn't necessarily lead to effective use of email. And also, there's so much email that we can't really be expected to give our full attention to all of it. So then how do you manage all of it? Here's a few, several tips. Mentally prioritize who your VIPs are. So think about who are the people who you want to respond to their emails quickly, who are just our key collaborators that maybe you have a little more leeway time, who are other people who are emailing you that you like emailing with them, but it's not urgent. And then there are the randoms that are just asking for your time and such. So it's good to at least think about mentally sort of the hierarchy of people who are emailing you. So then you think about how quickly you want to respond to those various groups of people. And think of yourself, are you a reactive person or are you a batcher when it comes to email? Reactive people are kind of checking their email all the time and then responding to it all the time. Batchers usually check their email a few times throughout the day, perhaps on a schedule. And batchers, as Jocelyn mentioned, are found to be more productive, happier, and less stressed. So it would be a good idea to be a batcher if you can. And if you expect an email from a VIP, that's going to expose you to being distracted by irrelevant emails. So maybe your boss is going to be emailing you and you're looking out for that email, but then some unrelated email that isn't urgent ends up capturing your attention and gets you off track. So then this leads us to my favorite takeaway from the day, which is to set contacts as VIPs to get smartphone notifications only for specific contacts. Now, I haven't yet gotten this implemented on my phone yet because I don't use the Mail app on iOS, but I need to give that a shot and try that, because that's something that definitely gets me, especially when there's like a podcast guest that I'm really hoping to get a response from soon. And I want to be responsive to that person because they're very high profile. That's a great time for me to turn them on as a VIP and get a notification. And then I can be relaxed about it and not worry about the rest of my email. So another thing that you can do is set an expectation with bosses and teammates just about how responsive you're going to be to their emails. If they're open to that type of conversation, it's helpful to have a conversation where you say, you know, how quickly should I be expected to respond to emails? You might find that your boss actually says, oh, you know, within a day or something. You don't have to like respond right away, and that can free you up to do better work. Another good hack from today's conversation is to add the plus sign and then whatever to your Gmail handle, if you use Gmail, and set up filters that way, and you can also track nefarious use of your email that way. And also, Jocelyn mentioned Easily Do for one-click unsubscribe. I haven't tried that yet, and I do want to try that for all those newsletters that end up coming in where you're kind of like, I don't think I signed up for this. You can just quickly unsubscribe. Then, all right, so those are some different ways that you can manage all that's coming in with email, and you can also move projects forward with email. So here's some tips about that. Always try to close the conversation. Have that as a mantra. Offer up as much information as you can to close the loop with whatever email you send. So also when working with decision makers, and this ties into that previous one, propose a solution. So if you're working with an executive, rather than asking a question, give them an opportunity to just say yes or no and try to keep that project moving. They can easily respond and keep things moving. Set up Calendly or Schedule Once. These are scheduling services where people can schedule appointments with you, especially if you're somebody who books a lot of appointments. It can be very useful for the recipient to just be able to pick a time that works for them, and that's that. Don't brainstorm on email. And if somebody in your team starts to brainstorm on email, it can be helpful to gently compile the ideas into a Google Doc and then say, oh, these are great ideas, and suggest a meeting so you can discuss all of those ideas. And use distinct and descriptive subject lines. This is my own little pet peeve. Use distinct and descriptive subject lines for different conversation threads. So if you are on one conversation thread and you close that issue out and you want to talk about something else, send a separate email. Don't just respond and then start talking about a separate issue. If you have two different issues that you're going to email somebody about, send them two separate emails. That way you have two different threads that you can keep moving. And of course, the reason why we even use email is so that we can connect with other people. So how can you use email to build and manage relationships? When you are making an introduction, make sure both parties are interested before making an email introduction. Don't just dump them on whoever it is that you are introducing them to, especially if it's one of those friends that you have that you know gets a lot of emails. There's a little bit of extra work, but avoid some really awkward and aggravating situations that are going to be associated with you. You know, so this is especially true for those friends that are getting a lot of emails and requests for their time. If you want to remain friends with them, it is a good idea to make sure that they're open to the introductions you send them. And when you are emailing somebody cold who you don't know, lead with the ask when emailing to ask that favor. Jocelyn mentioned to imagine them seeing that couple lines that's in the preview on whatever email client they're using on their mobile device, and how's that going to look? And when you're making those requests, position those requests in a way that they benefit who you're asking. So if you want to have them in your podcast, you talk about how you're going to promote their work. This is what I do. And you talk about why you're a good person to help them. In my case, that's mentioning the people that I've interviewed previously, which has just been kind of a laddering up process. And you can use Boomerang or followup.cc to remind yourself at an appropriate date, such as to align with a book launch, which is what I did with Dan Ariely. Just even though he's a contact of mine, even though he's a former colleague, I still wanted to time things so that it was going to align with something that he was doing. Also, try the slow burn strategy, which is kind of what I did with my first guest, Jason Fried, just being around to help just a little bit here and there in a way that is not annoying. This is a lot more effective than just simply requesting out of the blue and getting into the sea of randoms that come into that person's email box. So that is a lot of different tips about managing email and getting the most out of email. If you liked that conversation, and especially if you liked learning about the psychology of cutting out the noise to do great work, check out my conversation with neuroscientist John Cuños on episode 8. And in that conversation, you're going to learn how to create the ideal conditions for creative insights. And of course, check out Jocelyn's book, which is called Unsubscribe. You can get it at cadavy.net/email. If you appreciate all the work that goes into making the show, there are a few ways you can help support it. One is to subscribe, whether it's on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You just got to hit the little subscribe button, and then you're going to find out every time a new guest comes in. Another one is to rate the show. On iTunes, it's just really a matter of clicking on the little star thing, on the little star rating thing. Most people give it 5 stars because, after all, if you're listening to a podcast a lot, you probably like it pretty well. But it's a really simple, easy way to help. And the final way is to use my affiliate link when shopping on Amazon. If you just go to cadavy.net/Amazon anytime you shop on Amazon, that will magically donate a portion of your purchase toward making Love Your Work. It doesn't cost you anything. It's really awesome. I mean, I had somebody a few weeks back who bought like thousands of dollars of camera equipment using that affiliate link. And that was a nice way to support. That person was probably making some sort of corporate purchase or something like that. But even for your small purchases, doing that helps an awful lot. And it's a great way to show your appreciation and help this show grow. And before I go, I've got to ask, do you like books? If you do, sign up for my book recommendations. About 90% will be nonfiction on subjects spanning from biographies to neuroscience. Just go to cadavy.net/reading and get the first set of recommendations right away. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Cadavy. The theme music for this show is CNU, performed by The Album Leaf, courtesy of Sub Pop Records. Love Your Work is a production of Cadavy, Inc.